Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel. It is a Tuesday, the 25th of November. Very nice to have you with us. And obviously, we have a lot to talk about today. We are going to focus probably mainly on the Ferguson decision, but we will get to other issues as well. We welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. We're already getting letters, so we assume we'll get many, many more. So roundtable@wamc.org. And you can also go on our website, wamc.org/roundtable, and post on our website so the whole world can see and we can all comment and look. Let me introduce our panel to you this morning. Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Pleasure.
Nice to have you here, as always. Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain is in the building. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
And office leader in the Albany office of Phillips Lytle, LLP, corporate attorney Rich Honan is with us to hopefully bring legal
yes, we need some legal advice.
Legal advice.
Hopefully.
And let us know what's going on from that end of things, our expert this morning. We welcome your letters again, roundtable@wamc.org. All right, so at 8 o'clock Central Time, 9 o'clock Eastern, it actually came around 9:20. The decision was read in regards to the Ferguson decision. The grand jury that was put forth to look at the evidence and to decide of whether the police officer who shot Michael Brown, killing Michael Brown, was to be indicted, decided against any indictment on the charges and the options that they were given. That was again, around 9:30 Eastern time last night, although it was a quite lengthy presentation. And then, of course, it has just been a night of chaos, of demonstrations, fires, bursts of gunshot, looting, waves of tear gas. The governor of Missouri says that he will send in additional National Guard troops to help quell the worst violence that the city has seen since the actual killing in August. So great unrest. I want to talk about that, but I think we'll hold off on that for a moment and talk about the decision itself and what happened within the workings of the grand jury and what you make of their decision not to indict Officer Wilson. Alan, we'll start with you.
Well, I knew they weren't going to indict him. You know, I had this look, this is a country where many, many police officers have gone before grand juries, and inevitably there's a no bill. You know, it is as rare as hen's teeth to see anything else. You had people of color sitting on that grand jury, you had other people, and it was a unanimous decision. And there'll be a lot of talk today that we'll have about whether it should have gone to a grand jury, whether the prosecutor, but that's a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. If you do one, you know, you get into trouble with some people who think that, you know, you're bucking, you're not doing what you should be doing yourself. Look, there's a sociological issue here that I think we have to talk about, and that is blacks in America have been treated very badly for a long, long time. And part of what has coalesced around this decision is the anger about the way people have been treated since, you know, a couple hundred years ago. We had a civil war on that issue, and it's gotten worse and worse, and we've seen it flare up every once in a while. But I can tell you one thing, and then I'll shut up, and that is there is always, in my mind, you know, the possibility that people will just take advantage of a situation. When you see a woman with a baseball bat, you know, not tapping but crashing into somebody else's store, somebody's store and property, it means I'm waiting for this opportunity. Look, there were wonderful people out there to protest in New York. There were wonderful people. They did it right. In Chicago, they did it right. Looters mean that people will feel that their security is endangered. And in any society, when security is endangered, it will be preeminent over the loss of civil liberties. I'll tell you that right now. So that while St. Louis may have burned last night, Ferguson may have burned last night, this will give those people who want to come in with all kinds of guns and everything else, from you see it from Tiananmen Square to everything else we've ever seen, is going to happen. It's dumb when you do that in the long run if you really care about, what's happening to you. I don't know anybody.
Rich, what do you make of the decision?
I agree with Alan. It certainly didn't seem I guess we all have to kind of take as a given that the evidence was as the prosecutor later told us it was. So we didn't have the chance to observe it, but we'll take that as a given. If that indeed was the evidence, not only was there never a chance of an indictment, you kind of feel like had it not been such a politically charged situation, you wonder if it even would have been presented under ordinary circumstances. Remember, the standard is there probable cause to believe a crime was committed? That's a much, much lower standard, obviously, than the guilty beyond a reasonable doubt that you would find in a trial. And it sounds like they didn't even come close.
We just heard from Matt, who says, what happened in Selma, Alabama in the 60s was racism. What happened in Trayvon Martin is racism. What happened with voter ID legislation is racism. Michael Brown was a thug, the kind of person society needs protection from. Endorsement of violent protests in response to the grand jury decision is endorsement of lawlessness and as racist as the lynch mobs of our darkest past. And that's from Matt.
Mike?
Well, I was just going to mention that we had a chief judge of New York's Court of Appeals several years ago assert that a prosecutor could indict a ham sandwich if he wanted to. And that really just expresses the power that a prosecutor has before a grand jury. They can decide to give them a minimum amount of evidence just to get the indictment and then take it to a public trial so the public can see all the evidence and that can clear the air. Or they could take all the evidence available and try to just pretty much, answer the question on whether someone is guilty beyond a reasonable doubt and do it in the grand jury room and then avoid a public trial. It was a political decision to go and put all the exhaustive evidence before the grand jury. This is what they came up with. We will, I'm sure it'll dribble out what went on in that room, even though they said it would be private. I'm sure that there'll be stories. Someone will write a book. Someone will go on CNN, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And we'll know more very soon. But he very clearly, if as you say, Rich, if he just needed to show, just a just cause to pursue charges, he could have gotten that. What he did was he clearly threw the whole thing at the grand jury, and that prevented it from being aired publicly, which could have been a problem, but it was a political decision. Whether it was the right decision, I don't know.
Yeah, I agree with Mike. It clearly, just the way usually prosecutors use a grand jury to get an indictment, but you're right, you could just as easily use a grand jury to not get an indictment, at least in my experience. And, I'm usually dealing with federal grand juries because I do white collar crime when I do criminal stuff, tax fraud and securities and kind of, the white collar stuff. But it just seemed like there was a tremendous amount of evidence and counter evidence that went in that you would not normally see in the grand jury context. Don't you think, Mike? Usually they just put in what there
right.
is.
If you just want to take it to trial, you just show enough evidence in favor of, the person being guilty, just to take it to the next step. And then the rest is public.
I'm curious as to what you made of Robert McCulloch, the prosecutor's presentation last night. I have to say that I understood what he was trying to do, but I also felt that there was a almost a talking down. And an over explanation. I agree completely with Alan. You just two sentences into that, you knew where it was going, as far as what the verdict was going to be. But I wonder if that didn't help. Look, I don't know if there's anything that was going to keep their from being violence, but I also don't know if they did themselves any favors in the way that it was presented.
You know, I have never seen mail like this. I've never seen telephone calls like this. People are really angry on both sides of this, really angry. This is not the usual stuff. I thought that the prosecutor was maybe a little sing-song, maybe a little looking down, you know, from his condescending from his high perch. But the mail that I've been getting, personal mail, and people saying this is, you know, basically one of the worst men in the world. I don't think he is.
The prosecutor?
Yeah. And how can he be this way? One doesn't get angry at that kind of response, but one has to understand just what a nerve this has hit in the American people, which is, you know, which side are you on, brother? And, you know, I think it is true that the guy that the suspect went and Mike Brown went in and stole cigarettes, and that there was a police call, and that the police showed up. And then there was this discussion about whether the hands were up or whether the hands were out, whether he wouldn't get down on the ground, whether it doesn't really matter, because if you have a preformed opinion of the way in which racism works in the United States, and this one size fits all, and then you're not going to deal with the incident nearly as much as you are with your anger about the way we do our politics in this country.
What did you make of the of the prosecutor's reading of the decision?
I agree with both Alan and Mike. I think it came across as condescending, I thought, to me. And I think it was meant to show why, yes, we went to a grand jury. You know, I can't be second-guessed on that. I thought he was actually speaking, trying to speak directly to people.
The public,
mm-hmm. And I'm not convinced that's his job, but clearly he felt that other people were speaking to the public, and that he needed, in his mind, he felt that he needed to mitigate that or counter that. I mean, really, the more he spoke, the more you kind of said to yourself, you know, in a way you did the system a disservice, because if this was all the evidence you had before you started presenting, you shouldn't have presented. Right. I mean,
well, that's what sort of came through my mind.
Yeah.
But then this goes back to Alan's comment about damned if you do and damned if you don't.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I was watching last night. I was actually up at, you know, my usual 2:30, and I was watching the.
Why we all sleep, you're right.
Yeah. Well, no, I was watching the CNN coverage, and I was watching Chris Cuomo, who I think basically did a superb job, you know, in what he did. And the way he covered it, I was watching him out in the middle of, as the tear gas canisters were arriving right next to where he was standing, and the press was being told, we're not using tear gas, we're using smoke bombs, and in a very simple way, Cuomo said, that's clearly untrue. But he didn't go on to accuse the government of being untrue in general. I thought he handled himself extraordinarily well. The press is being accused of making too much out of this, of causing this to happen by saying it's going to happen and implying all of that. There are no winners in this, I'll tell you right now. And I think there are going to be a significant number of losers.
We're 28 minutes in, and this is the first time I've disagreed with either of you. So that's pretty good for us, considering our political, where we are on the political spectrum. And I think that CNN did a lot to foster this. Unrest.
And I agree with you.
Okay, and I think Cuomo himself, they made this.
This
their
is Chris
cause
Cuomo.
I'm sorry. Yes.
Just for anyone other Cuomo.
Yes. I'm not.
All right. Yeah. I'm gonna put the pause button on you for a second because we have a break. We have credits to make up for, and then we have a break, and then we're going to have a 90 seconds of news from the BBC, and then we'll come back and we'll continue this conversation. We'll talk about the press. We'll talk about the president's comments. We'll talk about your many, many letters, and we'll get all of that after
this. And we'll be doing a Vox Pop on this today.
Yes,
2 o'clock.
Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. I'm Joe Donahue, along with Alan Chartok, Rich Honan, and Mike Spain. And we welcome your comments. Roundtable, it's me and three guys in nice suits. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org.
I take some exception to that, Joe. My suit is not that nice.
Your tie
well, you
is
look
great.
Good. Yeah, your
the
tie is great.
Tie
you look great. Good.
Yeah, thank
but
you.
You're all very nice, Sam. Well,
we get the point, though.
Yeah. just got khakis. Yeah. Anyway, so let's go to hit a couple letters, and then we'll go back to our. Or do you just? No, how do you want to do that?
No. Whatever you.
Let's go to some letters. We welcome your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll go to letters, and then we'll come back. And I want to talk about the media. I want to talk about the president's comments, and then we'll go on to some other stuff as well.
Okay. Our old legislative gazetteer Tina Araka has written. Look at the, but it's too long. Look at the big picture. The announcement last night was pathetic. Not only was it condescending, but it was a justification for what we all knew was a foregone conclusion by the grand jury. If a cop shot a white kid 7 times, this would not have even gone to a grand jury. Don't you get it? Cops are killing young black men in this country. This guy is part of the culture. If a suspect is walking towards you, do you really shoot him multiple times and kill him? Are these cops just all dying to kill someone? Even their response last night in the streets was pathetic. They were nowhere around to stop the looting, but they were driving tanks down the street to quell free speech. Racism is alive and well in Ferguson, the United States. That prosecutor is an embarrassment. When he was speaking, all I could think of is the prosecutor doth protest too much. As for the writing, recall Langston Hughes' poem about what happened to a dream deferred. Does it dry up like a raisin in the sun, or does it explode, says Tina. And Joseph says, Dear Alan, yesterday you said illegal immigrants in the U.S. were slaves. How ridiculous. They are here voluntarily and can leave any time. Moreover, they do not necessarily take menial jobs not wanted by others. I have been down south where they work on construction crews and do skilled labor like welding. Sorry, but I feel you simply don't know what you are talking about and therefore should not have commented. Today you said you knew the police officer in Ferguson would not be indicted, presumably because of racism. No, I just said he would not be indicted. I didn't say because of racism. That's where you're absolutely wrong. So take it back. Like the OJ trial, you never know what a jury will do. You should see through these juries that they're the only ones who are around who see all the evidence while the media is second guessing everything. I love NPR, but you have lost touch, says and then he goes on beyond the how many characters here?
140. 140 is a character.
We're there.
And Steven says, we consider a young man, a felon for stealing cigars, a crime, but another man who swindles thousands by selling bad mortgages can't be prosecuted. Let's try to understand the outrage. And John says, I heard you what you said about the potential for violent protests to become counterproductive to meaningful change, but don't you think Malcolm X, by his very existence, was as instrumental to the civil rights advancements of the 60s as was MLK? Yes. You know, I do, and I do think that that's the thing, that's the silver lining that may come out of this whole thing, and that is that there is a new consciousness about racism that may not have existed before. Anybody want to check in on that one fast? No.
Mike?
Oh, well, silver lining, I guess you can only hope that this will get people's attention and it will begin a dialogue that will bring about a better understanding. I mean, you know, I've heard a colleague say yesterday at work that, you know, a white colleague say that whites see things differently than blacks because they are different.
Well,
from the
true.
Perspective where
but
you are.
On the other hand, Mike, think about this. You know, Times Square, the police were nowhere to be seen. They just got out of the way of the people who were there. And another time it might have been very different. There might have been a more violent confrontation. Chicago, the same thing. Ferguson, the same thing. the cops just absented themselves. And maybe there's a new consciousness about what police should be doing in violent with the use of violent force.
Well, wouldn't you think that the Ferguson police have learned a lot from last August?
Yes.
Yeah, already. Yeah.
Yes, I do.
I mean, whether it's something they want to do, they know they must do it this way now. They must stand back and let the people express their First Amendment right of speech, not violence, but speech.
Well, the idea that they would stand back when people were knocking out windows with baseball bats shows that if the police, whose function is to provide public safety, are going to make a decision to let people burn, to let people loot, as opposed to, you know, creating more of this sense that they are the bad guys, that's an interesting perspective in a society.
Can I ask a question, though, again, because we touched on this going into the break. But if we are, I felt that because of the media presence and the on-the-ground coverage that was there and the cameras that were following the protesters around, that they were inviting them to do something that they may or may not have done. I don't know.
So you think the looting wouldn't have happened if the cameras weren't there?
Well, and I also wonder, I wonder that. I also wonder that if the police, if the cameras weren't there, would have acted in a different manner. In the sense of, you know, we're under a spotlight. We have the lights glaring on us. How do we respond to this? And how is this going to look to the world? And again, back to your, I think the mantra of the morning is damned if you do and damned if you don't.
Sure.
But I do think, from my perspective of watching it last night, I thought, okay, you have all of these people, the media, they all got cameras, and they're just sitting there watching this group of protesters, and they said, okay, they've given you what you want, you know, what we were most fearful of. Now go do something.
Yeah.
That was my takeaway.
Well, I think you described it well. I think that people feel compelled to do something. They show up angry at the outcome of this grand jury, and they want to express themselves. It does become, I think the term used to be mob mentality, where one person starts to do something violent and other people join in, and people get angry and they begin to express themselves in a very violent way. I mean, and when you have cameras there, I think the psychology of kind of putting on a show, I guess.
So when you see a liquor store being broken into,
To that point, I mean, if the police...
But just let me just finish that one sentence. And then in a very methodical fashion, a couple of people walking to their cars with boxes of liquor, do you think that that's mob mentality or opportunism?
Oh, absolutely opportunism. And why police wouldn't have intervened, I can't understand, except that they were accused of not showing restraint in August after the original protests following the death of Michael Brown. And they are obviously, to me, it's obvious that they're avoiding a confrontation where someone might be hurt or someone might be killed.
Yes, and let's remember that nobody did get killed.
Yes.
Well, that was absolutely, look, I'm sure the police, first, they didn't want people to get hurt, but also, you could, just speaking as a manager, if I was in charge of those police, I would have said, I don't care if they burn down the town. I am not going to be the guy in charge when we kill another person over a protest of us killing a person.
You can really hear that conversation.
And I think also, Mike, I definitely think you can hear that. And also, I think that when Obama came on and said, I encourage the police to show restraint, I'm sure there was something in the cops' mentality said, you want to see restraint? We'll show you restraint. You guys burn down whatever you want. Yeah. There's your restraint.
Yeah.
I think a little bit of that was...
The analogy of, the bumper sticker, when something terrible is happening to you, call a hippie. Mm-hmm. Then we'll show you. Yeah, right.
All right. On that note, let's take a break and come back, and we'll discuss this more. We have more letters and a few other. I want to get a little more into what the president said last night, and talk about that as well. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.
Support comes from MPAC, presenting a weekend of new work, including a performance by sound artist Pharmacon, an installation by light sculptor Melvin Moti, and two debut theatrical productions, December 4th to 6th, mpac.rpi.edu. Field Goods, providing year-round deliveries of produce from local farms for pickups at workplaces or community sites, and offering workplace wellness programs, field-goods.com. Lewis Sign Company, a family business celebrating 90 years in the community, supplying signs, LED message centers, digital printing, vehicle wraps, sign and lighting service. Tell the world with signs. LewisSigns.com. And 10,000 Villages, offering home decor and handcrafted gifts with locations in Albany, Burlington, Northampton, New Haven, New Canaan, South Windsor, and West Hartford. 10,000villages.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. We're talking about Ferguson this morning, and we're weighing in on a whole bunch of issues. Just a reminder, 2 o'clock this afternoon, there will be a Vox Pop discussion. We'll open the phones. Alan will take your calls and talk about this issue in much more depth. And, of course, we'll be covering it throughout the day, including Midday Magazine at noon today. In the meantime, we'll finish up our couple minutes here and talk and welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. Alan, a few more letters.
Hi, all. I agree with Joe that the cameras were trying to make looting and violence happen. When the president was speaking and saying we need to show those people trying to make things better, not just any violence, CNN insisted on having a switch screen showing disorder with cars. They couldn't refrain from emphasizing the exciting, in quotes, bits long enough for the president to finish his speech. Second, I think the prosecutor proved he was a weasel when he kept referring to everyone's focus of fading away from the problem, be in quote engaged that this had to that had this happen. How sheltered do you have to be not to know that the black community relentlessly pursues the subject? They could not be more engaged if they tried. And that's from Narcissa. And let's see here. Whoa, no, I'm not going to read it.
More than 140.
Yeah, and also.
Okay.
Yeah, you're quite right. No. There's some guys who just throw rotten tomatoes for no good reason.
All right.
Guy was one of them. Okay. And I keep hearing, see, I have to go through all of the letters. And the problem is that I hear from people who are talking about other things. Okay. Rich says, does the rest of the world have our problems? Why are our police the way they are? Well, that's a profound question, don't you think? Does the rest of the world have our problems? Yes. The rest of the world has our problems.
I think this police issue is
universal.
A rather global issue.
Well, the authority in general.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yes.
Some have made it work, though.
Irene says, we're in trouble more than ever. Racism is alive and well. Curious, New York State has 23 on their grand jury.
Yeah, New York State has 23, and I'm trying to think of the federal grand juries. It seems to be
50 people sometimes.
Yeah, it seems to be. I thought the same thing. I thought the grand jury panel was small, and I guess that's just a function of Missouri.
Wanted to be on a grand jury, and I get called every year. And once I was called for grand jury recruitment, and they took one look at me, and they said, not you. So that was...
so much for that.
That was then.
Yeah.
Kenner says, along with the unrest and disorder on the streets of Missouri, wasn't there kind of restlessness and a lack of moral orderliness in the flip-flopping versions we got from the police of the shooting? And Sean says, I do not believe that grand juries don't indict police. I have been a criminal lawyer for 25 years, 7 years as a defense attorney, 7 years as a prosecutor, and 15 years in the appellate world. The last shot was to his head as he was bent forward about 153 feet from the vehicle. Self-defense requires that you retreat if possible. Wilson was in a car. Brown unlikely had a gun given that he struggled with Wilson for his. It was a crime. Okay.
And then, that's spoken like a true criminal lawyer, by the way.
Yeah.
Because it's a different standard for self-defense of a police officer than it is from somebody just trying to defend themselves on the street.
I probably missed a few, Joe, but
that sounds good. I think we got the tenor.
I just got to say, how come the one fact that seems undisputed is that the kid tried to wrestle the cop's gun away? Didn't that come out from
there? Will be people who will say that is disputed. I'm not saying there are people who think that the World Trade Center was
okay, I'm just saying that's a pretty big fact to skip over. I mean, when you're wrestling somebody's gun away, you're basically saying, you know, just so we're clear, I want to kill you.
And by the way, all night long, they were showing the pictures that the grand jury had with tape measures next to his head showing where his bruises were.
The cops, from
the fight. So, yeah.
I want to just quickly talk about a couple of things. One was the president's remarks. I don't know how you all feel about this. Again, this is quite anecdotal, but I felt the president wasn't quite on his game last night. I thought that the remarks that he made were somewhat off the cuff.
And a little less planned,
especially considering you assume they knew the decision well before the rest of us did. And I also thought that somebody alluded to this in the question, and maybe this is because of that. I was watching CNN, and you see this thing about, you know, we're going to quell the violence and let's see what happens. And meanwhile, they're showing, you know, them beating the hell out of a car. So maybe that had played into my perception of it as well.
Well, but on he had a real problem here. He had to say, I'm sure he was upstairs in the dining room with his kids and Michelle, and you know, there was a sense that this was a racist phenomenon that we were looking at. On the other hand, the president of the United States, the black president of the United States, had the obligation to walk out there and say to everybody, okay, cool it. So, you know, you had a sort of dual agenda. And I think what you're sensing, Joe, is exactly that he was, on the one hand, on the other hand.
Yeah. Although I liked what he said, and I thought that the words were there. It just seemed a little less scripted than.
Do you think that the split screen had some impact on
Absolutely.
That, though? I mean, seeing him trying to speak calmly and thoughtfully while the other
you see
screen
this eruption.
Is, you know, cars on fire or whatever it was.
Right.
It's really changed the context of how he sounded. I believe. Yeah.
I agree, but I also think he was having difficulty because I don't think he really believed. He wasn't saying what he really wanted to say. What he really wanted to say was, you know, this is all because of racism, and you know, we should go out and seize this moment. I think he's demonstrated he's somebody who.
And he skirted that.
Yeah, because he's not a guy who, depending who you talk to, doesn't, you know, people on my side would argue he doesn't have a lot of respect for the rule of law. And so it's hard for him to, I don't know, Alan. I think that he had trouble. I don't think it was that he wasn't on his game. I think that if he said what he really wanted to say, he would have said, this is an outrage. This is because of institutional racism, and we have to do something, not violent, but we have to do something about it. Well, but he felt constrained that he had to.
I think it would be difficult for him to say that because it could be taken the wrong way. It could be regarded as fueling the anger that people
right.
have.
But that's what he himself, I think, wanted to say. And I think that ambivalence is what you heard, Joe.
I agree with you. That's exactly what happened.
One of the other issues that we talked about during the break, and I want to bring it up during the show because why should we have all the fun? And that is about the timing of it. You know,
inexplicable.
I just
don't get it.
It seemed really weird. You know, Mike was saying during the break, you know, this was Eastern time, but 9 o'clock our time, 8:30 their time is when it comes out. and you're doing it at night.
Okay, Thanksgiving's coming up.
Yes.
They come up with, the grand jury says, okay, we're going home, we're going to have our turkey, we're gonna do this, and here is what we have decided, finally. This is it. This is our verdict. What are the choices? If they let it go till Sunday at 11 o'clock, as we were saying, then somebody's going to write, get the poop from one of the people on the grand jury.
It'll leak out.
And they're going to say, you know, these guys held the whole country captive in order to get this done at the right time. I suspect that. That's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah.
I'm curious with your experience in federal court. I mean, what's the next step? Are we going to have a federal case out of this, a civil rights case? Is that what ordinarily would happen when a local grand jury won't take an indictment on something?
It would not. That's not what would ordinarily happen. But here, because of the charges, right? Because there's still a Justice Department investigation going on. Mm-hmm. There's going to be the possible civil rights claim against the officer himself, which all the experts seem to say is weak. But then there's the kind of institutional racism claim, which I'm sure is going to continue.
About the whole police department,
yeah,
perhaps.
Right. And, so that investigation will continue. And I do think that was a signal. That was a signal that this is not going to die. You know,
well,
Holder going down there, and
you know, Rich. But if there's a fact pattern here that the officer did grapple with the guy, that the kid had, you know, done the crime, and that there had been a police report about it, and that, you know, it seems to me when you talk of in New York City where the cop is in the dark in the stairwell and shoots blindly and hits an innocent person, that's a whole different fact pattern.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. I also think that the investigation into the force, just from what we've heard, seems warranted. Right, because it seems like there have been some repeated incidents, and you know the Justice Department has spent a lot of time over the last 6 years investigating police departments,
absolutely,
you know, just for this. That wouldn't just be this incident. It would be, I think they're looking for a pattern of incidents, and it sure looks like, you know, without having done any investigation, that there could be better communication, better relations, right, between the police and the community, in that particular community.
We saw what could happen in New Orleans, which was a real racist police department, and the unmitigated crimes that were done by some of the officers, and the federal investigation, sure.
And any final thoughts as to where we go from here? Obviously, we're seeing violence. We're seeing. I'm sure we'll be talking about this tomorrow as to what has taken place today, and as kind of this sinks in a little bit of where we go from here. It seems hard to know exactly where we'll.
I think the racism industry, as they talk about, right, is going to continue, right? On the good and bad side.
What's the good side on racism industry?
Well, just right. Well, the that it,
it keeps the, people, the conversation.
Yeah,
going,
the people
I guess.
In charge of the industry would say that we're keeping racism. The idea of racism, you know, being foremost. So that's going to go on. It's hard to draw a positive conclusion that there's going to be some kind of awakening here, though. I don't know, Mike. Do you see?
No, I hope, like Alan had said earlier, that there'll be a silver lining here and that it will raise the conversation and awareness so that people do see that this racism does exist today.
Oh,
some
boy.
People deny it. There are racism deniers.
Yeah, well, there surely is racism in this country.
We'll end there this morning. I want to thank everyone who took part. Alan, Rich, Mike, thank you so much for being with us. We'll talk to you. We'll talk again tomorrow. The roundtable will continue after this short break.